42 is the answer.
You two? What's you two got to do with Doctor Who?
42. 42.
Was Bono been in Doctor Who? I suppose he has been with the... They must have played Do They Know It's Brit. It's Christmas in the background.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Bono, he's a singer.
577.
Same to you. Is that not exactly what you just said, Mary?
It is.
Funny that, isn't it?
Nope.
What do you mean, no?
Not funny.
I tell you what, I mean, it's not quite as good as my video camera that used to give off a full HD picture. This isn't full HD, it's fuzzy. Right, let's open up my priority jingles folder.
APP Services, the Varsity at boob1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 577, and my arms are too long. And here's Kirby Bartlett Sloane.
I need clothes, that's what I need, and a big long scarf. No, I've moved on from that. Looks stupid.
Yeah. And Mary Lang.
Droids harvesting spare parts. Oh, that sounds familiar.
I think I might have done a quote from the wrong episode.
You told us we weren't going to do a review.
I'm not reviewing it. You silly man. I've told you I'm going to talk about it, but not review it. Well, I'm going to review it, but I'm going to talk. I'm not going to... Oh, God. Right. Not going well, to do a synopsis on it. Like about, we didn't do one last week.
About 20 minutes ago... Master. About 20 minutes ago, Fred left... my room down here in the basement after watching the episode from last night, and she said she wants Tennant and Tate forever.
Tough. Okay, right then. So we've got, I'm going to talk about The Blue Yonder, which is the episode that was on last night. Now, I know, Mary, you want to have a moan. I mean, a talk about the previous episode as well, but we'll have a look at that back in a minute. I'm just going to talk initially about last night's episode. Right, only because I sat there concentrated all the way through the episode, and there were bits of it were a little bit slow going, but I think they had to be to lull you into a sort of a foreboding sort of there must be something coming up soon, and make you feel comfortable like the Doctor and Donna were within that environment, and these sort of the almost like light-hearted moments to make you feel, is this really sort of a light-hearted story? Is it a horror? Is it a thriller? You know, how's this going? And there was obviously a couple of absurd things, especially when they were all sort of really sort of big and jammed in the space and then they shrunk back down. But I haven't got a problem with that. They were aliens we'd never met before. In the whole, I was totally engrossed in the two... actor scenario of the story. Just I know we did have a guest appearance from Isaac Newton and a guest appearance from a wonderful Doctor Who actor right at the end of the episode, but on the whole I just thought it was just mind-boggling watching those two actors in an episode with just them two, and it was a bloody good episode, to be fair. It was very much not so much a base in sea, really it was, but it didn't feel like it because it was such a big base. So they're on this humongous spaceship and
lots of corridors to run down. Yeah.
I like the little nuances of it, you know, the slow walking robot and the reasons why that was set like that and how clever these sort of morphing aliens were. And mind, obviously, they could read people's minds and become them, which was quite menacing in itself. And them trying to work out who was a real one, and they were so exactly like them. It was so clever. I mean, and it was sort of, in some time, I suppose, a bit confusing in some ways, but it had to be confusing because the Doctor and Donna had to be confused by it. So it was, you were all sort of encompassed in this sort of. Very adult, very intellectual story. And the bit at the end was, my God, because we don't know what, we know that Donna is only going to be in these three episodes, and we don't know what they're going to do to the character. And the bit at the end, I mean, I didn't know she was going to still hope they were going to not kill her off at there. But, oh, God, it was just, wow. It's just, and yet, I sat there really, really enthralled by it. Dev fell asleep within about 2 minutes, to be fair. But I was totally engrossed in this amazing one-off of Doctor Who. And then I read lots of people saying how boring it was. And I saw a thread where everybody moaned about it, and I just tucked to the bottom. Well, I liked it. Sorry. Well, you don't have to be sorry. I'm not bloody sorry. I'd said sorry by way of sarcasm. I thought it was great. I thought, wow. I mean, it was very Disney Plus in regards to it, that it looked fab. And, of course, Tennant and Tate were fab. Oh, wow. And I have to say, RTD was fab as well. He's really good at writing these really tense stories with a very small cast. And I don't count the bit. I was going to do is my quote was the Mavity thing. Of course, that's just the theme thing at the moment, isn't it? But
it's a fun thing. Yeah, Mavity is a fun thing.
Yeah, and everybody seems to be adopting it at the moment. And, and it's such a little thing that's obviously changed. I mean, it also could be a forerunner of what's happening with the next episode. But it was really good when I'm going to say I really liked it. Kirby, what did you think of it?
It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Some of the best Doctor Who I've ever seen, period. I've now seen it twice, just came off of a second watching. And I've seen nuances that I didn't see the first time through because it was just trying to comprehend what was going on.
I've seen it once, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case.
But, oh, wow. As I said last night, coming right off of watching it the first time, wow, it reminded me of bits of Midnight. Just the copying and how tense it was. And Midnight's one of my favorite stories of all time.
Yeah, this work. Again, same writer.
Yeah, really?
Is it the same writer?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And basically a bottle episode. It's just the ship was bigger.
Yeah, and it reminded me of the ship from Passengers.
Some people online are speculating it might be the same creature.
What might be?
The others might be the same creature from Midnight.
Oh, okay. Potentially, I suppose. Was a long way out in space, wasn't it?
Yeah, just so good. I wish that we could have Dr. Donna forever.
Well, you can't. But it's a good flavor of the Doctor's past, you know, our Dr. Donna.
This is so far, these last 2 weeks have been such a refreshing time.
Well, you don't know that's not what we're going to get with Shooty, although someone's already said that apparently the first episode, the Christmas one, is not that good, but that's nice. We haven't even seen it yet, you know.
And how... I don't know. Oh, and one thing that I was also telling some of my Earth Station 1, Earth Station Who friends last night at dinner was... Yeah, Earth Station 1 had a dinner last night. That it's also so weird. I noted what time it was yesterday, and I started watching the episode only 5 minutes after it was on for you guys. So I'm watching it basically at exactly the same time. Okay. No commercials, no funny business about how I'm getting the episode. Just go on to Disney Plus and there it is. Good. And so I was able to participate in a lot of the feedback immediately afterwards.
Okay.
I have a feeling that even be ready with the soundbite that Tim Drury probably is going to read my comment on his thing.
Wasn't actually ready, but never mind.
I know.
Waiting for it. I should now play another piece of music to cover the gap.
Anyway, brilliant, 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 brilliant.
Oh, right. Okay, so...
And be ready with your sound for Mary.
Oh, yeah, of course. Well, no, because but that's really... I'm not going to do the sound twice, because we need to talk about deep breath in a moment. Oh, my knee's really hurting today. Oh, I don't want to get around that issue. I'm going to have to sit in a funny way. So, now we're going to talk... Mary can talk about both. That would be the previous episode, the Star Beast, and... this episode, which is the Blue Yonder. So, tally-ho. You're waiting for the... Well, you weren't waiting for the sound effect.
Whoa. She also needs to tell us about a certain convention.
Yeah. Oh, can we talk about the convention after we've done these little...
Yeah. I thought the convention wouldn't come until later.
Yeah, we'll do that after the feedback section, I think. Don't let me forget, though, Mary.
That's fine. On last night's show, the episode, was light years better than the Star Beast. It actually had a cohesive plot, albeit as improbable as a lot of what was happening was. It still was, as Kirby likes to point out, like a midnight. You know, it was tense, it was exciting, it was scary. And you've got two... you know, playing against each other, you know, not just twice, but in four people. And I was totally with it. At first I thought, oh, this is silly, you know, how they got there and, you know, this is great. But I just found myself totally pulled in and cheering them on. So I don't really have anything to pick apart. The acting was great. The writing was excellent. The direction was, I mean, it could have been very boring, but the direction kept it moving and kept it exciting. And, you know, I don't know where they're going to go with the Doctor and Donna, you know, after the next episode or during the next episode. But, you know, I too wish that these two could go on. You know, maybe there could be a spinoff, a Dr. Donna, you know.
I would love that.
Unseen Adventures or something, you know. There's no, like, social play of, I want to say, modern woke themes or anything. It was just an adventure, and it was a great, clean, wonderful, heart-stopping at times adventure, especially when Donna was still in the ship. You know, I had no idea how he would get her out.
You know, that would normally be a cliffhanger, wouldn't it? But it was so satisfying to have that all to watch within that little space of time.
I felt desperation when she was screaming.
That was brilliant, wasn't it? Again, acting of the highest caliber all the way through it.
Good marks all round. Now, do you want me to talk about the Star Beast?
Hang on. I suppose we'd better play it. Go on then.
That didn't sound good.
The Star Beast. Oh, all right. Let me frame this in that I know that it was like the celebratory 60th anniversary reintroduction of Doctor Who. Fans everywhere were just drooling to get their eyes on, you know, David Tennant and Catherine Tate again. And in all those ways, it delivered. This is like RTD's big sloppy kiss to all the fans that have hung in there. And it was an obvious invitation to anybody who's drifted away that, oh no, you know, we can do this, you know, come on back to us. But as for the story, the writing, the direction, the acting, other than Tennant and Tate, for me, it was a huge, huge letdown. It was just so chock full of stuff that only people who really follow Doctor Who all the time could get. I think any new person watching it could be very confused. And I know that the Star Beast was based on a comic character, so it's not like they came up with a bad original character, but come on. I mean, I didn't find it in the least appealing. I don't know, everything that was happening was just so out there, so reaching out to, oh, everybody, come on back to Doctor Who, and oh, we love you, and here's all these wonderful little inside jokes that people who follow Doctor Who are going to enjoy, and I thought it was horrible. And to top it off, I had to sit in a room with at least 600 people, listening to them screaming and yelling and crying over every single line that anybody delivered. Every new face that came on the screen was greeted with massive cheers and applause, and you know, which covered over some of the dialogue that was going on. You know, which should have been a good experience, but the other person that I kind of meet up with every year, we go to every Chicago TARDIS, we just keep looking at each other and shaking our heads. It's like, oh my God, not only is this a mess, but this crowd is totally ruining, you know, anything that we might enjoy about it. But, and I put the article in the, in our little communication group, that the CBC did an interview with Rachel Talalay, because she was there that night, and that was the first time she was exposed to an audience, you know, not of the people who made it, where, you know, she got to witness, you know, people receiving it, general public watching it, and because everybody's reaction was over the top all the time, and when the thing was over, and they did the standing ovation that must have lasted 5 minutes, at least. She was so overcome that there was supposed to be like a half hour talk with her afterwards so she could talk about the making of it. Now, she was so overwhelmed. She could not stop crying. So they had to cancel that and put it off till the next day. You know, she's an amazing and wonderful person. And I'm happy for her that this was received as well as it was. But, you know, It just didn't work for me. I think it was a loser on so many fronts. So that's my feeling about the Star Beast.
Well, thank you very much, Mary. The listeners may be aware of noises coming as teenagers appear in the backdrop. Well done for coming home in a...
How did you all react to it?
I mean, you haven't watched it, have you?
No, not yet. Still need to.
Right. If you want to stay in this house...
The last week...
You need to get her to watch Doctor Who.
I have to.
Yes, go on. Stop letting me eat out. Out! Right. Yes, anyway, it's quite interesting that the fact that what I've read on certain Doctor Who pages slate the episode we like, and Mary, I say we because it's all of us, and yet a lot of people like the episode that Mary doesn't like, and it's almost like a sort of flippy Marmite-y thing. Isn't that weird?
It's a Marmite thing, because I loved it.
I can see that it would be a very Marmite episode. Yeah,
no, I'm just ashamed that Debbie couldn't be bothered, and nor could Robert, no. Nor could Reese, nor could Ben. Who else can we list down that couldn't be bothered to be on the show this week to talk about a unique episode?
I do agree with Mary that it was supposed to be... a good place for someone to start. It was touted to be a good starting point for people. The Star Beast. It was not.
I would not
introduce anyone to Doctor Who. No, absolutely not.
No.
Yeah,
no. This episode, however, maybe not. But I'll tell you what. Obviously, you know, the Blue Yonder. Right. So we have that initial scene, which is great fun with the Isaac Newton thing. As I think Dave Simon, who's not a small chap, posts a picture of himself with the actor that played Newton in this scene, who apparently towers above him. And I thought, well, they must have found a big apple tree for him to sit under, because he's such a tall chap.
Well, did you see the making of?
No, not yet. Oh, I need to.
No.
The making of the apple tree is like miles away from where the TARDIS was. No. And they did a composite.
No, did they? Do you mean they didn't land the TARDIS in the tree? Oh, how really? Did they do that? Was I that special that effects?
Well, and they didn't even do it at the same time, obviously.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, how did they do that?
Yeah, no, that can't possibly be true.
And the scene at the end, of course, everybody's speculating. They knew that Bernard Cribbins had done a scene. And then that was such a sort of... You know, I think some people might have been slightly emotional by the scene where it looks like Donna's lost. You know, and she's screaming, and oh, they got the wrong one.
Well,
and, you know,
was,
that's quite, oh my God. And then,
big relief,
back in the TARDIS. TARDIS still looks fab. And then they land, and then that, oh my God. Because obviously they didn't know at the time that really was going to be a goodbye for Bernard Cribbins. And it just really hits you, doesn't it? And it's wonderful that's in a great episode. And even though it has nothing to do with the rest of the story, it's a great. piece of TV. Yes.
According to the making of, that's the only scene.
Yes, he would be.
With the guy.
He does look very poorly.
Yeah, he does. He does. But it's a great goodbye.
It's a great goodbye, Mary. Anyway.
Yeah, he gets to see the doctor one more time. Yeah.
That's lovely. It must be hard for those actors to see that scene, you know, because they wouldn't have known at the time. Right. So we move on to Deep Breath. Before I talk about Deep Breath, I've got all the episode sort of thumbnail things up on the screen. And you can tell the order in which they were filmed by the length of Peter Capaldi's hair.
Yes.
And you can tell that Into the Dalek, which is the next episode, was filmed before Deep Breath because his hair's a lot shorter. And then suddenly it's a lot longer in Robot of Sherwood. Well, then short again in Lidson and in Time Heist and slightly longer in The Caretaker. And he can't see his hair in the Kill the Moon or Mummy on the Orange Express or Flatline. But in The Forest of the Night, it's fairly long. Dark Water, you can't see. Death in Heaven, it's sort of fairly long. And, of course, Last Christmas would have been filmed at another time. Just thought I'd make that little comment. It's
eventually. In The Forest of the Night. Oh, God. I don't want to think about that.
Be quiet. You say this every time, and it doesn't quite pan out the way you think it's going to. Right, I'm going to go through the Deep Breath as quick as I can, because I've alluded to before that we do not need to spend hours and hours on. Oh, where the hell's going on here? I'm going to press the right button on these episodes. Right, so it begins with a dinosaur pounding around what eventually, after a few frames, becomes London, and after a few frames more, London in the Victorian times. And I said to Deb, well, because she watched it with me, must have been after 1860, because I'm pretty sure that the newer Houses of Parliament weren't built till then. And then we have the Paternosters watching with the police, and I think Madame Vastra appears to have a bit of gravitas, or should I say mavitas,
with
the local bobbies. Anyway, the dinosaur's got something stuck in his throat and coughs up the TARDIS, which I think the TARDIS probably would have been not... I know it's a dimensional thing, but I don't think that the dinosaur would have been big enough for the TARDIS to actually fit in its throat, but... It's a science fiction fantasy TV show, and it's a great way.
They made the dinosaur way too big. Yeah.
Of course, take a look at the
graphic I made 9 years ago.
Okay, well, I did mention that in a much quicker format. I think that's basically. Never mind, I was alluding to that anyway. Anyway, but it was fun that that's the way they introduced the TARDIS. The dinosaur coughs up the TARDIS, and of course the Paternosters tried to. Oh Jesus.
People have been so pedantic that they've worked out that this is 1898.
Wow, there you go. Okay.
Mainly because of the things in the newspaper.
I feel I should, because you interrupted me, I should interrupt you with what people have been saying on the live feed of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join. I went all Shatner then. Did you say that? This is called kissing. Phil, I'm just going to queue up a sound of it. Right then, so Lillian Robbins says, hi. And then video looks fine. And then Neil James says, hi, Twiggy, 20 megabiters. Hi, Lillian. Oh, they're off at it again, look. Dear me. Then just sent feedback, cutting it fine, sorry. And Tim Drury says... I have to do a new one. There's Tim Drury's mention again. Are you still having to use your phone for a live stream? Yes, Tim. I need to get a new gadget or a new cable. I don't know. I think it might be the actual gadgety thing that doesn't work anymore.
Christmas is coming.
Yeah. Get it for Christmas. I've already bought loads of Lego. Where do we go? Who else? What's the next bit? Lily Robbins says, Tim, oh God, they're having private conversations on a comment feed, but never mind. Tim, you were just mentioned. I just mentioned him. And then, excellent Doctor Who yesterday, much better than last week's. I'm glad we don't have that Ian Levine on the programme. I think things could get very upsetting. And then Lillian says, Rachel Talalay is great. Who's Rachel Talalay? Gobby? Okay, never mind.
Rachel Talalay was the director of yesterday's.
Oh, was she?
Not yesterday's. The week
she
before.
She was director of the Star Beast.
Yeah, okay. Star Beast.
Okay. Yeah. Well, apparently yeah. She's great.
She directed a whole bunch of ones She's directed a whole bunch of them. Yeah.
Thank you,
she's
Kirby.
Good. It was an honor to meet her.
Right. So anyway, the Paternostras deflect the police so they can go down to greet the Doctor coming out of the TARDIS, and of course Peter Capaldi comes out of the TARDIS. He's just signing off his DWAS memberships while coming in and out, because he's not with DWAS. He had his own little, Oh, did anyone watch the Channel 5 documentary, which featured this story about Peter Capaldi in the alternative Doctor Who fan club when he was a teenager, not when he was in Doctor Who, obviously. Very interesting, you should watch it.
No.
So, anyway, the Doctor is all demonstrating a degree of confusion and looks fab in Matt Smith's slightly altered suit. Pretty sure he's a bit taller than Matt Smith. And, of course, the Doctor doesn't actually know who the Paternosters are at the moment, so he's a bit confused. I tell you what, the way my mother is at the moment, the way he's acting doesn't half remind me of my mum's sort of dementia condition. There you go. And then Clara comes out. I don't know what the TARDIS is covered. Oh, it's phlegm, isn't it? It's dinosaur phlegm. Apparently dinosaur phlegm is white and gooey. So I suppose maybe they've sort of checked out the phlegm of lizards and whatnot. So after a bit of banter on the beach, the Doctor gets a bit giddy and falls over. And they take him back to a residence. I do like the title sequence a little bit.
Yes.
I remember it being, oh, someone's copied the Doctor Who fans' title sequence, but I'd forgotten it was like this.
And, yeah, I never liked this sequence.
It's very Capaldi, and that's what I like about it.
Well, they paid. They paid the YouTuber who came up with it.
Yeah. A shame that the Doctor Who fans who have some of the missing episodes can't be paid. But anyway, move on. Right, so the Doctor is in a bedroom in a nighty and trying to sort of... he's a bit confused and he's introducing himself. He doesn't really know who he is.
I do enjoy his confusion over, you sleep in one room, yeah, then you go into another
room. Really
and
good.
And I'm like, don't look very in the alien. Mirror. It's absolutely furious.
Yeah.
Yes. That was going to be one of my quotes.
Yeah, it was one of mine too.
So meanwhile, while that's all happening, the dinosaur's wandering around London sort of at night, sort of a little bit lost. And Clara's very devoted. She sits by the Doctor. And I do like the scene where she's sort of in the room and he starts translating the dinosaur's
Yeah.
Words. Oh, yes. I love that. When he's half asleep and translating for the dinosaur. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so eventually, I'm just moving forward a bit. Still moving forward, because I wanted to get to the bit where the Doctor sort of he wakes up and instead of going out the door, he decides, oh yeah, then we meet this sort of weird sort of half clockwork mannequin, half person, who's very sinister, quite rightly so. And but the Doctor, oh, of course, he nicks some bloke's face because he needs the parts. The Doctor decides he can't go out through the door, so he goes out through the window in chase of said and try to catch and torture, I suppose, the dinosaur, and say that he's going to get the dinosaur back to dinosaur land. Madame Vastra, because Clara's having a few doubts about the Doctor, so Madame Vastra sort of interviews her in a view to try and sort of cure her of this affliction, which helps her a little bit.
I don't think I've ever seen... A companion have such problems accepting a regeneration.
But you would expect a companion, especially a human companion, wouldn't you?
But I've never seen it before. My theory on this whole thing about her not accepting the Doctor being old, I think that was the showrunner's idea, because she's supposed to be us as, you know, the Doctor's companion. She's in place of us. And I think that there was a real need, or he felt a real need, to convince us, the public, that he can go from a really young, energetic doctor to this older one, and it's still the doctor. Because yeah. I think there was a lot of public resistance to going to
an older
doctor.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? You said a young, energetic doctor. He's very much an older, energetic doctor. So the energetic bit still.
Yeah,
right?
But
so.
I think that they anticipated the resistance on the part of the public. So they let Jenny take the...
Yeah.
Not Jenny, Clara. They let Clara, you know, take the place of us and be convinced. Yeah.
Anyway, so the doctor, like I say, goes on the roofs and tries to get the attention of the...
I hate hearing this old stuff, because Peter Capaldi's a year and a half older than I am.
Bloody old then, eh, Kirby?
I know, but there's a huge... There's a huge contingency of young fans who were there because of Matt Smith.
Yeah,
I know.
And Tennant.
My birthday's coming up this week, and I'm feeling old.
Oh, here we go. He's fishing for happy birthdays. Happy birthday, Kirby. Anyway, moving on. Anyway, the Doctor nicks a horse, immediately followed by Strax. And like I say, I guess this is a great episode for Strax, to be fair. And Jenny, I'm waiting for Mr. M to send some sort of feedback in, because Jenny is hot, especially when she's posing for the
Master,
portrait.
Master, your voice disappeared.
Did
it? You totally disappeared on us.
I tell you what, right? The good thing about that side of things, I've got the Master microphone, and my voice will not have disappeared for our listeners. I do love it when that happens.
And that's why I say, Master?
Yeah, really. It's like, well,
no, it's not.
Where'd you go?
So anyway, they go on after the Doctor trying to find them, and the poor dinosaur gets burned.
I know. The poor dinosaur is killed.
Which is really quite upsetting for everybody.
In a terrible, painful way.
Because I do like the way that they didn't paint this dinosaur as a evil sort of eating people and stuff like that, just as an animal that was lost and scared. I quite like that particular aspect of the dinosaur. Anyway, all this is being watched by a sinister man with half a mechanical face, and the TARDIS is brought back on a cart and parked in a yard, and Clara is dressed in Victorian wear. Looks a bit like she did
again.
In the Christmas special.
Yeah, again, right.
And
a few years later, she'd be wearing more Victorian.
Yes, she was in that. I didn't think of that irony. Where's my bell gone? Oh, we'll have to do without the bell, but that was very good, Kirby. I do like the Strax's medical examination of Clara. Very amusing, if not necessary to the story, but an enjoyable scene.
I didn't remember seeing her skeleton during that scene.
Oh, the one I saw, you saw a bit more than the skeleton.
No, I'm talking about what we see.
I'm joking, Kirby.
Yes.
Anyway,
right.
Then the Doctor, meanwhile, is he's getting a bit smelly now. He's gone down this sort of lane where this drunken bloke is, and he's found a mirror, and
he
wants...
That's Sarah Jane's husband. Come on.
Yeah, I know. It's cool, isn't it? I don't know. He wants the clothes, doesn't he? Wants the jacket.
His second appearance on Doctor Who and third appearance in the Doctor Who universe...
Thank you, Kirby. So I'm skipping through because we're getting through this scene. There's a newspaper, isn't there? And isn't there an advert in the newspaper that saying about the impossible girl and where a hint as to where he can meet her. And like I say, the scene where Vastra's sort of got an easel and Jenny's sort of posing for it. And she looks really gorgeous in that scene. Of course, she's not actually painting her at all. And I love that there's a little subtle line when Clara comes in and she says, oh, just pop your clothes over there, which I thought was quite funny.
Yes.
So, moving forward.
On the TARDIS wiki, there are paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs where people have broken down every little ad in that newspaper.
They are so sad, aren't they, Kirby? Aren't they sad?
They're worse than I am.
Yes. So anyway, they go to this restaurant and they meet up, and the Doctor pongs a little bit, and Clara doesn't mince her words. He does indeed pong. But what happens is they end up falling down on their little seat through into like a basement area, where the sinister bloke is fast asleep. And
he's recharging.
Charging, yes. How much does he charge? probably less than the restaurant would have done. Well, just moving forward a bit because it was a long scene. So down
I
in
like
the
reference, the doctor wishes that his companion's legs were a little bit longer, obviously referencing Amy.
So, have you noticed also, obviously, if you look that in each archway, there's a sort of a mannequin that's sort of dormant. And one of them is very prominent in this episode, is our old friend Clem So. Did anybody see Clem? It's a fun thing.
I don't know what he looks like, no.
Well, he's Asian. He's got a very long hair.
Oh, okay.
For goodness sake. Oh, you recognize him now. He's quite in this episode quite a lot. He doesn't say much, obviously, but he does a lot of staggering and staring. And
One sort of odd thing is that out in the corridor, when she goes out in the corridor, the Sarah Jane's husband's out there, too.
Well, maybe he got, kidnapped.
Maybe he got killed or something. Yeah.
Anyway, to escape these mannequins, she has to hold her breath because they can't sense
deeply.
Deeply. And anyway, so a lot of this happens, and then she has this sort of flash forward or back to a classroom where Ellis George, her face appears. I didn't remember.
I had forgotten about that.
I didn't remember her face appearing in this episode.
It's been 9 years since I've seen this episode, and it was even when I met Ellis George, I did not remember that she was in this episode.
Nor did I, Kirby. I've just said that. It seems I've said it twice now. I do like the design of. I didn't see the point in him taking his hand off and gripping his own shoulder, but the eyeball within the head of this mannequin-y, weirdy bloke. I thought it was really well done. And still looks pretty good even all these years later. And it's like 9 years since this episode went out. 10 years since it was made. Very, very clever.
Oh, Master, you know the scene where the doctor grabs the face of one of these creatures?
Mm-hmm.
And puts it on himself?
Mm-hmm.
The mask that was pulled off of the mannequin ripped. So they didn't have a backup. And the backup they found, what they used, was actually a mask of Matt Smith that they happen to have.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that, but well done. But yeah, that was quite clever. It is Matt Smith. You can see. Isn't that clever?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it fits, doesn't it, in certain ways?
Yes,
space,
it does.
And the fact, I like that. Well, where's my bloody bell gone? You've missed out, Kirby. That's too really good. Oh, here it is.
Well, I'll remind you.
No, you don't have to, because here it is.
I have a bell ready.
There you go, a double.
Oh, thank you.
It's never happened before.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Anyway. So, after some skullduggery and being threatened by lurching creatures, the Paternosteras arrive through the ceiling Strax is in full Sontaran stealth mode, and he's loving it because it's a little battle he can have. And there's lots of threats and holding breath, and Matey tries to escape with the doctor hanging onto the bottom of the seat.
And there's the controversy,
which is
the kiss.
What kiss? I didn't say a kiss. What kiss?
When Vastra provides
the air. That's what they do underwater.
That was so controversial.
What, kissing a lizard?
Yeah. The BBC got complaints.
But they already said they were married.
I know.
But back then...
Shock!
That was not acceptable.
So it was less acceptable for Jenny to kiss her wife lizard wife, or whatever, than the fact that there's two female actresses.
All the news.
Just saying, gay marriage was not as accepted then as it is
female,
now.
Female kissing, but there was no tongues. It was clear to exchange breath. But there you go. Funny time.
Oh, I'm not complaining.
I'm not complaining either.
I'm just telling you what
I watched it over about 300 times. I didn't really. Anyway, meanwhile, the doctor is having his usual doctor villain conversation and trying to persuade the. Because at the moment, he's flying around this great big balloon made of skin.
yeah.
And he's trying to find the promised land, etc., etc. On this. The ship, the doctor sort of goes into a cupboard and finds a little file which has Madame de Pompadour on it. So obviously this is the ship, or part of the ship, in the future.
We're looking for spare parts, yes.
Yes, spare parts are very interesting because that's a very famous story, isn't it, spare parts?
Absolutely.
Mm. Yes, it is. But it also refers back to the Madame Pompadour.
Yeah, and I like that. And I like that the evolution that these clockwork creatures have had. Anyway, Peter Capaldi in these scenes, now he's the Doctor, and he has been probably about 10 minutes in the story, is absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
Very quickly is the Doctor, and he should be because he's an expert on Doctor Who. So he's probably had years to think, now how would I play the Doctor? And yes, and he does it in the Capaldi way. And I'm not bothered about the Scottishness. The Doctor has all sorts of different accents and don't care. Years and years ago, I would have cared. I didn't even like McCoy not being able to disguise his Scottish accent back in the day. There you go. So. Yeah, I've just seen that scene with the kissy kissy. I've rewound it and played it again and still enjoy it. The Doctor is trying to persuade a clockwork bloke to sacrifice himself to save everybody, because obviously all the other creatures are trying to kill the Pasnosras, and lordy, something very heavy just hit the ground upstairs, are controlled by him because he's like the hub. I think you might want to lift him up off the ground there, because there was a great big crash upstairs just a second ago. Anyway, he falls out of the thing and lands on a spike. I didn't quite see where the spike was because I looked away from the screen. But as soon as he's dead, all the other creatures are dead. Oh, it was the Victoria Tower. Or was it the Elizabeth Tower?
Yes.
Which one is it,
Gabby? Elizabeth Tower.
Yeah, because Victoria was still alive when it was built. Dead. So, meanwhile, they go back to the stably place, or Muse, or whatever you want to call it, and the TARDIS has left a square imprint on the floor, and, of course, Clara thinks she's been left behind. So she asks if she can have a job with the Paternostras. That's a spin-off, isn't it?
That would have been a great spin-off. I hope they do a Paternoster spin-off.
Then the TARDIS, who looks a bit tidier now, reappears with you've redecorated, I don't like it. That seems to be getting used an awful lot.
Yeah.
I love the redesign with the bookcases and everything.
Yeah, I don't mind. I like all the TARDISes, to be fair. I also like the fact that you said he liked the round bits. It's not got enough round bits on it. Well, it has now. So.
Well, if you love all the redesigns, did you like the redesign in this latest episode?
Oh, Mary.
Yes.
Oh,
yes!
Absolutely gorgeous, as Craig Revel Hallward would say. Yes, keep it forever. Love it.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Capaldi's round things, it turns out that there, later on, about two seasons from here, there are more round things will appear in it.
Splendid. But when you talk about Capaldi's round things, and obviously Tennant's round things, and hopefully Shooty's round things, or Gatwa's, whatever you want to call him, it's just why you didn't mention Whittaker's round things, otherwise people might get the wrong idea. Moving on. There's a great big sort of bookcase in there that looks like the organ from the Attack of the Cybermen. Anyway, moving on. So, Clara... The Doctor takes the TARDIS back, well, as he calls it, home, for Clara. And Clara thinks, well, I'm really confused there. I've got an opportunity to get out of this. And the Doctor wants her to stay because it's the Doctor. And for him, it's still Clara. But if you think back to the previous episode, everybody, he'd not really seen her for a few hundred years because he was aging and aging and aging in that Trenzalore place. But anyway, he's decided now that he needs to have her around to help him through this... a new phase of his life. She's not sure, but so she gets out of the TARDIS, and that very never done before, never done since, the phone call, which was set up in the previous episode with the phone hanging outside the TARDIS door, which she hangs back on the receiver. Hair's got a bit shorter in the interim. She has a conversation with the previous version of the Doctor. I'm not sure, can't remember if I liked it previously, but I don't mind it. I just feel that, you know, that the baton's been handed over, and then it's been slightly handed back, and that's been handed over properly. But I don't mind that. I think it's different, and I get that Clara, you know, they're trying to cover this. Clara's got an old, which he keeps on calling him the boyfriend, doesn't he? Even the Capaldi Doctor says, that the, his previous incarnation, she referred to him as, or thought of him as her boyfriend. And this,
she had Danny, huh?
Yeah, but it's almost like he's had this farewell speech to her twice, because when they did the actual regeneration and the TARDIS on the previous episode, he'd sort of done all these goodbye things. Now he's doing it again, but previously. There you go. But I don't mind it, honestly. And it sounds like I mind it, but I don't. I think it's quite charming in some ways. And I love the way he says, "Is that the Doctor?" And so does the other Doctor say, "Is that the Doctor?" So they can hear each other in the background, and it gets a bit of a description of what his future self, which I quite like. And it leads to Clara going off with the 12th Doctor for adventures we will see for, in due course, for quite a few episodes, to be fair. And the only thing I don't like about the 12th Doctor, which sort of distracted me a little bit, was his hair. Because I much prefer him having the sort of more bouffanty hair, which he had for most of his time as the 12th Doctor.
But I didn't mind the short hair. You didn't mind it?
No, I didn't mind it. That's the only thing that I found quite distracting. But nevertheless, and at the end of the episode, and I've forgotten this bit, our clockwork friend arrives in almost like a Garden of Eden with Mary Poppins in the background. And, oh my God, it's Missy. I love Missy. And I've forgotten how much I love Missy.
Oh,
and
I know. I was so happy to see her.
She's so fab. And, yeah, it's great seeing Missy back. And I'm thinking, oh, great, we're going to see Missy over the next few series as well. So, yeah. So it's another little plus about this era. So, yeah, all in all, quite enjoyed it. It's not my favourite first handover story, but I think all the having the Paternosters there was quite great. The sort of mixture of gruesomeness, having Clem in the episode, obviously Clem's so friend of the show, etc., etc., was fab. And obviously John Davey was in it very briefly. You have to blink and you'll miss him, but he is in that scene towards the end when they're all just about to try and kill everybody in that, you know, before Matey gets spiked. But on the whole, it was okay. It's a good sort of taster of what to come in regards to, obviously, with Missy. And there's also been hints about the, you know, why was that message in the, you know, in when she had to phone for the helpline. That was harking back to and stuff like that. Again, there's talk of Clara being, it's Clara Who rather than Doctor Who. Again, I didn't get that with this. I just felt that she was just being a helpful friend and companion, and she was a bit confused.
We don't have Clara Who yet.
The Doctor himself, generally, in this first episode is not as prominent as the Doctor as he is in subsequent episodes. But in here, we get to have at least half of the episode of him as himself. It's quite... I remember thinking, oh, first episode of the series, great. We've got another, you know, 12 episodes to go. Well, 11. And those days are gone, I think, you know, because obviously when Whittaker became the Doctor, it became 9 episodes, didn't it? And then it was 8, then it was 6, and it was, you know what? So it's nice having that. They'd already shortened it by one episode anyway, and the 13th one being the Christmas special. But
Even current ones, they're not going to have... 12.
No, they should have 24, shouldn't they, Kirby?
No, they're going to have like 8.
God, you're not answering me. I think they should have 24.
It's so expensive to make these things, especially with all the CGI they use.
Time consuming as well. What did you think about it then, Kirby?
I came into this time not having seen it for 9 years. And I was thinking... I wasn't going to like it. I don't remember. And then I went back and listened to us 9 years ago, and I kind of liked it. And actually, this time through, I liked it better. Partially because having seen all of Capaldi's run, it's good. I really don't have any real issues with it, except I did not like the redesign of the Clockwork Droids. I wish they had been the way they were originally introduced. It was fine. It's not the best first story for a Doctor. That's still the 11th hour. And it's fine. Now, question. Did you watch the leaked version before this came out?
What I think everybody was watching those leaked. You're talking about those the early working.
Yeah, yeah. I saw it watching those. two weeks before it was broadcast.
Yeah, yeah.
No, enlighten me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, someone in Florida, I believe, was in charge of putting the closed captions on, and they stored a work print without. It's a black and white work print without special effects, whole bunch of them, and also all the scripts were stored on a public server and got leaked. And the BBC panicked, and they said, "People, please don't watch these. Don't watch these."
Oh yeah. So of course we all went right online and looked for them.
Yeah, we all watched them.
So I know Kirby would do such a thing.
Master, apparently you did not.
No, of course I didn't.
And they're all pretty much the same, except when we get to Robot of Sherwood, it was Robots of Sherwood. There, they cut a scene which had multiple robots.
Oh, well, thank you, Kirby. Right then, everyone, here we go. Mary, what did you think of it?
Well, at the time, I was so looking forward to Capaldi's Doctor, because I had such respect for Capaldi as an actor. And I really enjoyed his early confusion, and I liked Madame Vostra's challenging of Clara on this. And again, you know, I said that earlier, that I think because Clara was the stand-in for the audience, I think that we, the audience, needed convincing that this older doctor was, you know, just as wonderful as the one that we were leaving. But then all the diversion into the lifestyle and everything of the Paternoster gang, you know, I'm not a Paternoster gang fan. So for me, it was all kind of tedious that those scenes just seemed to kind of, you know, stretch out the episode, and not really contribute anything, which you made a note of when you said, you know, about the, examination of Clara. Mm. Yeah. You know, it was cute, but you know, I just wanted the story to keep going and not go into these, you know, funny, diversions. But it is a good story. I think it was well written, and I think it was very well made. And, you know, I really can't pick apart much fault. You know, and again, the coming into the Paternoster gang to help them out, you know, that was nice. It was nice. But, of course, what's his name? The potato guy falling through. And all that.
Potato guy.
He's always so played for laughs that, in a way, I'm kind of sorry for him. Because I think he's supposed to be a wonderful warrior, but he rarely shows it in these.
It's what he thinks, isn't it? But not necessarily the case.
Yeah. And Capaldi's portrayal of all the confusion, not being able to find the right words, being amazed, you know, at how things were, you know, a bedroom, you know, with just a bed in the room, you know, what's that for and all that. I really enjoyed that because, yeah, it did portray the confusion of a new body, a new mind and everything. And it was done very, and the mirror, don't look in the mirror, it's angry and all that. It was a funny but touching way of portraying the doctors trying to adjust to the new body. But for me, I mean, if she could have just got, I mean, when she says goodbye, you know, I really can't handle this. I'm thinking, boy, if we could just go back to that. And she walks away. And we could have a great time.
Oh, Mary. Then
she gets that phone call.
Yeah, but we're going to see lovely, beautiful Jenna.
You know, we again, the audience has to be convinced that, okay, yeah, this is the new doctor, and you have to help him out. The way that phone call goes, you know, the way it sounds like, okay, you've got to be his caretaker. And that's exactly how things develop over the course of Clara's time with him. She becomes not just his caretaker, but, you know, kind of the doctor himself. She seems to take over and become it. So I find the ending of it, you know, kind of the spoiler of what's coming. Except for Missy. I love Missy, and I'm so happy to see her there.
Absolutely.
And I'm looking forward to the stories that she's in.
Absolutely.
And by the way, John Davey was at Chicago TARDIS too, he had great fun, you know, pointing out to us all the things that he's been doing, even with the new series. So that was fun.
Excellent.
But anyways, that's what I think. Good story. It was well done, but you know, there were minor, tweaks that I would have appreciated.
Okay.
Oh, that's Mary. By the way, 9 years ago, when we were recording, you speculated correctly who Missy was.
Oh, I did? Oh, yes. Good for me.
Well, can I just, can I make a point in regards to Missy or Michelle Gomez, who plays Missy? Now, obviously, at the time, they weren't considering having a female doctor, but I reckon she could have nailed it, not played Missy, but just been the first female doctor, because she's so good. I reckon she could have done that. Not dressed as Missy, but just been the actress that was the
You mean
the
Mary Poppins?
Doctor.
Because that no, basically is Mary Poppins.
I think she would have been a great doctor.
That's a disguise.
She was a good master, but she would have been a great doctor.
She would have been a great doctor. I think the Mary Poppins thing is just to try and cover the fact that she's the master. It's just a huge sort of disguise. Right then. Right, Kirby, apparently you've had loads of time to set this particular segment up, so I do hope you...
I still have to refresh the page in case something...
There we go.
Hang on.
So you couldn't have refreshed the page?
No, because it has changed at times.
Mary comes to the end of her piece. Okay. Do you know also, when that dinosaur bit at the beginning of the episode, before it coughs up the TARDIS, is a little bit of a homage to Invasion of the Dinosaurs. Just saying.
Oh,
right, that's given you enough time to load it up before I start reading them.
So I'm okay. I'll read it, then I've got something to say about Invasion of the Dinosaurs. Anyway, Mr. M, oops, I need to catch up. Sorry I missed the last two. Day of the Doctor is obviously fantastic, a 10 out of 10 in my book. Time of the Doctor, less so. I haven't rewatched it in a while, but it suffers from feeling like a clip show or stories we never got to see, rather than a story in its own right. 6.5 out of 10. I'll try and contribute something proper for Deep Breath if I can remember. Oh, and Jenna Coleman is hot.
Yeah.
Then there's the thing I made 9 years ago about the dinosaur size. Robert Haynes. By the way, Robert gave us feedback too, so we have to remember that. Robert Haynes says maybe she was on steroids. Mr. M then says, who frowned me this face? The Star Beast was good fun, good old RTD romp, 7 out of 10. While Boo Yonder was experimental and different, and I adored so much of it, 9 out of 10. But enough of that. On to Deep Throat, I mean Breath, by Stephen Marfatt. This is an interesting one. The story suffers from being about 75 minutes, when really it could do with being squeezed down to about 55, maybe even 50.
I agree.
So, yeah.
Yeah, some I agree. It was too long. I do agree.
Some of it comes across as plain old filler, including much of the Paternoster gang sequences. The real stars of the show are Jenna Coleman, who is, of course, hot.
Yeah.
With a reinvigorated characterization of Clara. And Capaldi, gleaming from the fiery eyebrows of the 12th Doctor, he's strikingly alien in a way that is so different to Matt Smith, and yet in this first episode, he inhabits a lot of Smith's mannerisms, especially by the start.
And his hands.
There is a darker tone here, a steeliness to this Doctor. The moment where he looks at his reflection after discussing how the faceless man had replaced so many parts of himself, the nothing original is left is my favorite bit. So to sum up, an okay story, overlong, but bolstered by great performances. Oh, and the clockwork robots are fab, 7.5 out of 10. Next time, Journey to the Center of the Dalek.
Very good, yes.
Okay, Neil James, whoever he is.
Yep.
Deep breath. I'm a sucker for Victorian settings, so I was bound to enjoy this. Missing a word there. And a dinosaur. Yeah, I'm on board. I knew Capaldi was a fantastic actor, but would be a fantastic doctor? Short answer is yes. Doesn't quite make my top five, but he sits proudly at number six. The clockwork face baddie looks great. And I love the scene between the Doc and Barney the Tramp. The spooky restaurant sequence is also a banger, and the Paternoster gang are at their best here, I think. A few negatives. Clara is hard to warm to, and the episode didn't need to be so long.
Agreed.
There's also a little too much of Moffat's smart-ass dialogue. Finally, Matt Smith shouldn't have been there. It's a new Doctor story. Give Peter a chance for Cliff's sake. But those few moans out of the way, I enjoy this one for sure. 3.5 out of 5.
Isn't it?
That's it.
Well, talking about the, you know, I was moaning a few moments ago about it being, oh, they've shortened the series to, you know, 12 episodes plus a Christmas special. Well, this was a double one, essentially. So,
yeah,
you know, I suppose they did. It was the same length. There you go. I do say there you go a lot, don't I? Well, there you go. Right then. So, Mary, I sent over some blurb for you.
Yep, from Linda and Terry Miles. And they write, now as we enter the Capaldi era, we have a dinosaur standing in the Thames near the circus clown's office called the Palace of Westminster. Deep breath, everybody. Let's hope it crushes the whole lot. Oh, but no, it just coughs up a police box. Odd, that. Mm-hmm. Ah, there's the, in quotes, lady in the veil talking to the local police detective. No, 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 don't go into the water of the Thames. In the Victorian times, it was an open sewer. The dinosaur will be dead from all that sewage within hours. Oh, dear, Clara looks so hot when she exits the TARDIS. That clockwork man looks familiar. Didn't the first tenant doctor meet a clockwork clown-faced machine with the same workings in their head? The Paternoster gang are as great as always. Strax gets some excellent lines, as usual. The actor who plays the tramp is Brian Miller, the lucky chap who was married to the late Liz Sladen. Don't look in that mirror. It's absolutely furious. We love that line, don't we?
Yeah.
Jenny and I are married, yet for appearance's sake, we maintain a pretense that she is my maid. Doesn't exactly explain why I'm pouring tea for you in private. Good pretense, isn't it? I hate being wrong in public. Everybody forget that happened. And not forgetting the old one, you've redecorated. Yes, I don't like it. Didn't they think somebody in the restaurant would have said something about the smell coming from the doctor's tramp's coat? Well, of course not, because they're all robots.
Yes.
Madame Vastra and Miss Flint are quite fit, and those tight-fitting costumes look nice. Yeah. Did he jump, or was he pushed? Who is this lady doing the Mary Poppins impression? Spoilers. Terry Miles.
Excellent. Okay, right. I have
Do you
more...
want me to read Roberts?
Yeah, please read Roberts.
Okay. Roberts says, okay, before I go to bed, I'll put some thoughts of the episodes down. Firstly, deep breath. I'd actually forgotten this was feature length. That clockwork guy is freaky. I thought he was a good creation. Some of the Moffatisms still annoy me. The I'm talking to the horse line, ugh, and talk about make Capaldi's doctor unlikable. It almost reminded me of Colin Baker's first stories, where he was made unlikable. Hell, they even had to get Matt Smith's doctor to reassure Clara that the new doctor's okay. Now, how did he know what time, day, year to phone? Other than a few quibbles, I quite enjoyed it. Though I hate the making out that the police are quite dumb. I'd forgotten the little Missy scenes. It's so obvious now who she is. Now, on to Wild Blue Yonder. Well, this was much better after last week's episode. It's getting bogged down with the message. It was basically a nice two-hander. I do like the Doctor-Donna combination. They are very good together. It's also nice to not have a companion lusting after the Doctor. That should never be a thing, if you ask me. We just had an adventure. Now, while I would have problems with a black man playing Isaac Newton, that wasn't the problem I had with him. It was more that Donna and the Doctor had said gravity first. It's irrelevant that it was mistaken in the episode for Mavity. It's still in past history what Donna would have grown up with. She would have said Mavity in the first instance. Of course, I suspect something's up with the toy maker's influence, so I'm sure some things will be addressed next week, probably even as to why we're seeing Tennant's face again. As Kirby's mentioned, it does have The Vibe of Midnight, another great Tennant story. And it was wonderful to see Wilf one last time. Damn, I miss him. I hope next week's episode will build on this episode and not Starbeast. It looks like it could be quite good. And so that's all he said, but I also responded, in the making of, there's a discussion between Tate and Tennant, not Doctor and Donna, between Tate and Tennant, where Tennant explains the gravity mavity to Tate, who had the same question that Robert just had, where he changed it, even though she said gravity, when he changed it, that changed time.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, that's
obviously
what I was
thinking. So it means that's why they all say Mavity. Even the Doctor says Mavity.
Yeah, you're right. It's like, you know, the butterfly wings thing. You know, the minute he said it, it just changed all of history.
Yeah.
And we are all going to be saying Mavity from now until we
I have
die.
A funny feeling it's going to be corrected in the show at some point, but yeah. Okay.
But we're going to have our fun with it before that happens.
Oh, it's, it's a little tweak that's... It doesn't matter, does it, at the end of the day?
Well, definitely 20 megabytes is handy in here. He's 10 to 6 on Sunday. He's running a bath and going to sit there in sports pages and chill out before the joy of work tomorrow. Anyway, yesterday morning, so I suppose it's probably to be ironing. And I think it's actually, given the fact the way it started, shame that's the one we're getting with me, but he was rehearsing because anyone likes him on Facebook, he's performing the Guildford Shakespeare Company in the Scottish play. Which he did very well, some people, you know, so I quite enjoyed that. Anyway, so here comes Peter Capaldi, and I forgot how long this was, an hour 20, so I was thinking it's about 50 minutes an hour, thinking, when's it going to end? Because it does, I wonder if then we did one, if it's two-part. I honestly couldn't remember seeing this. I couldn't remember anything about it. Story-wise, obviously, you've got the usual thing of a confused doctor, doesn't know who he is, doesn't know what's going on. This is probably one of the most confusing ones that's ever been. He really just hasn't got a clue, you know, who Clara is, who anyone is. But I think that actually is good because it's Peter Capaldi does play that very, very well, and I think you can empathise with it. And the way that the people around him are trying to make sense of what's going on. Obviously, Clara doesn't understand about regeneration. Interesting though, Vashti does, because there's the bits all the way through. I'm going to talk about something a bit later, but she knows what's going on and she's trying to explain it to Clara about, you know, what's happening, the fact he's got a new body but he's still the same person underneath, which of course the new cycle of regeneration ability, so it could be perhaps things have changed. However, you had this robot going around, you know, I think the bit with really taking the eye was actually, in a way, it was a very black comedy that was, because I think, you know, once you worked out what was going on, you could actually sit and laugh at it. And then you start seeing, it goes to the restaurants and it's the people there who are, what are they? You know, they're not breathing. Are they robots? Presumably they are. What are these people that the robot who... Did he actually have a name? I can't remember if he did or not. Was doing with them. You know, it was, because I thought he was the last one. I seem to pick that up part of the way through. So I think it's slightly confusing. Perhaps I'll just miss something, which is understandable. But he's looking for the promised land. You know, it's the paradise that perhaps all of us want to achieve, the Nirvana we want to go to. And you realise... As he goes on, he's been there longer and longer and longer. And it's, I like the broom thing. I mean, I think it was Only Fools and Horses, we had a similar thing about somebody's broom. I never watched that program, so only bits I know. But about the fact it's, he's changed himself and replaced him so much, is he still the same person? But then I suppose it comes down to, does he have a spirit? In which case, is it, you know, what's living inside the same one? I'm not sure that really came through, but that is what I thought. I suppose that's my learning about faith coming through. But it's, you understood, I think, where he was trying to get to. He was trying to make himself last and last and last and last. Then the restaurant with the escape capsule and it's made out of skin. Now, I thought straight away of the next doctor with the balloon there. I did wonder perhaps that's what Capaldi was thinking about. He says, something here, something reminds me. I don't think we ever found out, and I do know that obviously this story is set a lot into the future, where that was ever answered. Did actually he remember what it was, or did that just get conveniently dropped? It was just a way of keeping the story going. But I thought the way that they all fought was quite good as well. You know, Clara was being protected by Trax. It's, the robot didn't actually kill himself. Well, he did kill himself. He wasn't killed by the doctor. What a gaudy way of doing it. But, again, black humour, quite funny in a way. But that's the way he did it. And then, of course, he goes to the promised land, and you see this lady character, you don't know who she is, or her boyfriend, and of course, you know, we do find out what's going on. I think it's a great way of setting up Missy, because you never actually, sorry, just banging my phone there, she doesn't name herself, doesn't say anything, to say who she is or what's going on. It's only later that you find this out, so I think it's a great story for getting set up. In terms of regeneration, there's obviously bits that we talked about before, you know, you've redecorated, I don't like it. Now, the bit about Vashti, she said, here we go again. So presumably, you know, she knows about regeneration. You know, she mustn't therefore know about regeneration. I'm trying to think, how many doctors she knows. Did she appear against some Tennant as well? The Tennant doctor. I honestly can't remember. I'm sure people worked it out. But it's good things like that, a good nod to the past that, you know, for fans like us, you know, we always appreciate them. For people who don't know about it, it's just something they're saying that it doesn't actually mean any. So it doesn't detract from the story by not knowing about it, but it does add to the story, something that fans will do. Shane didn't see it because I think he would have enjoyed seeing the T-Rex at the beginning. Probably told me all about it and bored me with it. He does tend to have some going on and on and on about these things. But here we are. So we've got a new doctor. We've got a new look. Off we go. Off into the wild blue yonder. Another story there about that. And no doubt we'll talk about that later. But until next time, have you seen it?
That was Andy Nunney, everybody. Now, I haven't sped up his talking. That's the way he talks, everybody. Especially at the beginning when it starts off really fast and then it gets down to a sort of medium speed. But I honestly have not sped that up. That is how it sounds. Okay?
When he talks that fast, it's not always easy for this American to understand.
Yeah, well, I will say it's not always easy for this British person to understand either.
Okay.
So.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
Deep Breath by Stephen Moffat. We won't melt him with acid. Big Ben appears again. It is called Deep Breath, and the heroes have to hold their breath. The Doctor faints at the beginning, and Clara faints later. The dinosaur had to be big enough to get the TARDIS stuck in its throat, which is very much too big.
Yes.
But it is a science fiction TV show.
It is indeed.
The androids could have publicly killed the dinosaur, but it might have raised questions about them. The girl on lizard action was a bit controversial.
Like I said,
they had the previous Doctor ask Clara to accept the newly regenerated Doctor, even though he looked a lot older. A bit unnecessary. There was Manu who did not believe the dinosaur was real, even though it was right in front of him. That would explain how people forgot a dinosaur stomping around London. The first appearance of Missy, along with the suggestion that she was the woman in the shop. Wild Blue Yonder by Russell T. Davis. Character interaction and a simple plot, hallmarks of an RTD script. Good CGI and practical effects in this one. Like Deep Breath, this has a robot. This looks like one of the incarnations of Marvin from Hitchhiker's Guide. I hope he made it to the Promised Land after the ship was destroyed. Was the alien captain from the Horsehead Nebula? Nay. If the TARDIS crew had not turned up, the alien threat would have been destroyed anyway. This is the last of Bernard Cribbins.
That's very true.
R.I.P. Bye for now.
That's very true, but they did sort of happen upon the spaceship and unfortunately were unaware of what was going on, and therefore their story is created. So, yeah, I get what they're saying. They didn't deliberately land there, but he is correct that if they'd stayed away, they would just been trapped in that part of space forever.
Yeah, they would
right.
have.
Pardon?
I just said yes, they would have.
Thank you,
yes.
Mary. Yes, and Mary, for agreeing with me. Just for agreeing with me. And yes, so it's now on to Mary Lang talking about her experiences at Chicago TARDIS. Away you go.
Okay. First of all, it was an honor and a pleasure and a delight to meet Caroline Ford.
Caroline Ford. Woohoo!
Caroline Ford, the original. Yeah, I mean, you know, to go back to the beginning, it was great. It was wonderful and fun to hear her stories about what it was like to film those episodes that they did back at the beginning.
Yeah.
And a little on the scary side, because she spoke of how they didn't bother with doubles, you know, to do stunts or anything. So the scenes like in The Land of the Giants, when they're climbing like the chain out of the sink and all that, they're doing that. And there's no mattresses under them. There's nothing. They're just being told, you know, get on with it. Yeah, and she said that they came in later years with all this safety stuff. She said, you know, there were times when, you know, she wished that they had taken better care of them. She also talked about how she had a huge crush on Bill Russell. And how she had all these ideas of how she thought Susan could be to make her more interesting. And so she wanted them to, like, write into the script that her character did have a big crush on William Russell's character. But they said, oh, no, you're just supposed to be a rebellious teenager, you know, so no, you really can't show any interest in him. And then she also thought that, well, you know, if I'm an alien, if I'm here with, you know, this alien doctor, maybe I should be more alien and act a little strange and, you know, different than normal American teenager or, yeah, normal American teenagers or British teenagers, I'm sorry. And that was all shot down. It's like, no, you're just the audience representative here. You're just a rebellious teenager. We need you to be as much like the audience as possible. So every time she came up with good ideas, they would just shoot them down. She said they never listened to her or used any of her ideas. And that was very frustrating. So as things developed, you know, she was just getting more and more frustrated being the one who just like always twisting her ankle and always being, you know, rebellious and what have you. She said the only reward was whenever, you know, she did twist her ankle and Bill Russell could, you know, pick her up and carry her somewhere. She says that's all she cared about. But it became very frustrating for her that, you know, her character really wasn't developing. It wasn't doing anything. So she did request, you know, being written out. And so they did. And even now she's in her 80s and she's a petite little thing, but she is so full of energy, so full of good humor. She said that she was a trained dancer when they picked her, and she went on to become like a competitive horseback rider. So she kept being athletic, you know, which is, you know, probably why she's in great shape now. But I'm telling you, on Sunday, the con runs Thursday night, Friday, all day Saturday, and most of Sunday. And by Sunday, she was showing up at panels with big sunglasses on and confessing that she was really, really tired. So when it came time for me to have, you know, to take a picture with her, they had her sitting on a stool, you know, and I didn't have the heart to ask her to get off the stool. And because I was in each one of my pictures, some of which I sent to you, you know, I asked the people, you know, let's do something different, you know, and they all seemed to have a good time, you know, joining in the fun. I didn't ask her to get off her stool because I knew how tired she was, and I could tell by the thick pancake around her eyes that she was covering up, you know, some pretty heavy shadow. But she was willing still, you know, to do something a little silly, you know, so we did the, you know, the rabbit ears behind each other's heads for the fun of it, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, for me, she was the highlight of the weekend because, you know, the fact that she's part of Doctor Who history was amazing for me. John Davies and a fellow stuntman, I can't remember his last name.
Lewis?
I'm sorry, what?
Was it Mickey Lewis?
Mickey Lewis, thank you.
Yes, he was at FantasyCon last month.
Oh, okay. Now, you know, he was also a stunt person in Star Wars. He talked about that a little bit. But anyway, when the two of them were asked, who was your favorite doctor to work with? And they said that by far, the one that they... Not that they had a lot of fun with him or anything, but that they had deep, deep respect for him was Capaldi. They said that even on Capaldi's off days or when it was like break time or whatever, he would still show up on the set because he was so fascinated with the making of Doctor Who that he would come and he would talk to them and he would ask, you know, how are you working in that costume and how does this work and how are we doing that? And, you know, like, what's the grand design? And they said that it just was amazing to see his fascination and devotion to the whole series. Even though he was, you know, he was the star, and you usually expect them to kind of hightail it every time, you know, there's a break. So that was interesting to hear. Yeah, and you saw my silly pictures. I especially enjoyed having the picture with Peter Davison and Janet Fielding, because when I came in, you know, and the guests, as you probably know, you know, they're used to just standing there. Everybody smiles. You take a picture. Yeah. When I walked up and I said, can we do something a little different? And they looked at each other and they said, well, for us, different would be hugging each other. And I said, oh, no. How about if the two of you argue? And I was, oh, no, we never argue, you know, do we? And they went into this whole little comedy routine. That's about brilliant. How, no, we just never argue with each other. You know, we're best friends, blah, blah, blah. But they went along and they played out, you know, a big argument while I acted scared.
Yeah, it's really good. I love that picture.
Katie Manning was Katie Manning. She is a ball of energy. Yes. She loves everybody. She hugs everybody. She's out and among, you know, she's in the hallways talking with people, and she just loves this kind of stuff. She was kind of, and Janet Fielding, who is, you know, like this very sarcastic person, she says, you know who I plug into whenever I'm feeling low energy. So it was 3 days of a lot of fun meeting up with people that I meet up with once a year. Yeah. And I did meet up with Matthew Kressel, and we had a lot of nice long conversations. But he was on so many panels that I think he missed most of the rest of the con. Every time I turned around and I'd look at my schedule, it's like, oh, Matthew's on that panel too. So got to sit on
that. I'm surprised he's on all those things.
Yeah, because he's such an expert, you know, they all want him to talk about everything.
I love the pictures, Mary. You need to, because you've referred to them, you need to post them on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group so people can sort of relate to them in relation to the audio of this show, because they are fab. And I love your shirt as well. Is it a blouse that's got all the doctors on it?
You're talking about the jacket that I have
on? Oh, it's a jacket. It's difficult to tell because you're sort of...
I made that jacket out of fabric that has all the doctor's faces on it. Yeah.
Really good.
Yeah, thank you. And, of course, everyone else's big highlight, you know, and we all were looking forward to it, was, of course, the premiere of The Star Beast on Saturday night. And, you know, like I said, it was great fun and everybody thought it was the best thing in the whole world. I just wasn't that impressed. They have costume masquerades, contests, and they had the karaoke dance party late Saturday night, it's just activities all the time, and we had a great time. So, good fun.
Well done, Mary. Excellent review.
Thank you.
Chicago TARDIS. Okay, Doctor Who News. So what we've got coming up on Doctor Who News is... I'm going to have to go in reverse order, which is always a bit odd, but the church on Ruby Road. The BBC has released details of the Christmas episode of Doctor Who, The Church on Ruby Road. And they've got images from that episode. I'll tell you what, obviously we did see a quick sneak preview at the end of Blue Yonder of the next episode, which is obviously a regeneration episode or a ungeneration episode, because we don't know what they're going to do, whether he's going to... What I'd like to see, Kirby, and you won't like this very much, is when the 14th Doctor regenerates, that he does a sort of like he flashes into Jodie and then onto Shooty, because
that would be quite cool. Why would that bother me? I like that idea.
I was being facetious, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen that way, because it's the fact that the glow's regenerated. When you know, I didn't like the clothes regenerating, but there you go. Anyway, I've said it now, haven't I? So that's rather cool. Seeing we're getting so, because I feel that even though we've had these wonderful episodes with David Tennant and Catherine Tate, that the real Doctor is Shooty Gatwick, because we've waited so long to see him play the part.
Yes.
And of course, there's a little clip of him at the end. And we've seen another little clip of him saying, can somebody tell me what the hell's going on? So there's little tasters. I just can't wait to get into the 15th Doctor.
Not very much longer.
No. Wild Blue Yonder has got lots and lots of beautiful pictures on the... what's it called again? DoctorWhoNews.net. I said fancy.
It's beautifully designed. I love that spaceship.
And so is the TARDIS.
It's so weird seeing the filming pictures, because that long corridor was mostly blue screen, green screen.
I
expect it was, yes. That's about it, really. It's just talking about I'd be interested to hear if anyone's listened to the official Doctor Who podcast, Copycats. If so, I saw
that it's out there, but I have not listened /watched.
I bet they have to stick to specific BBC rules and stuff like that. So that's really it for Doctor Who News. We're all really excited about two more episodes of Doctor Who before... When's the new series coming? Can't be that far off, surely. But
to wait for Christmas.
Yeah, at least four episodes. It's really weird, isn't it? Four episodes close together. Of course, we're already into the... I was quite pleased we got into the Capaldi era before the end of the year, because we'll be into the Whittaker era by the end of this next year. So and then we'll get into whatever we're doing now, the year after that, and then I can hang my microphone up.
Yeah.
As you keep threatening.
Right. So the next bit is what we watched this week. I'm going to skip through things a little bit on this one. What's the time? 25 past 8. Okay, so I have watched loads of stuff this week. I'm going to try and mention a couple of things. We're watching a thing on ITV X, I think it's called. Jason Isaacs playing Cary Grant. So basically it's a biopic of Cary Grant.
Oh, I heard that's good.
It's bloody good. Lots of familiar faces in it. Acting is amazing. It looks beautiful. Very well produced. And it's a very... obviously, I knew a little bit about Cary Grant's life through watching sort of very much shorter documentaries. But the enhanced version... it's fascinating and beautiful. It's a beautiful homage to him anyway. Four parts, hour each. It's great. So if you get a chance, I can't remember what it's called, unfortunately. but that's currently on ITVX. Also been watching Lego Masters US, which, as you well know, I've been allowed to get Lego and build it because Deb's seen the light. So I'm grabbing that one. I'm grabbing the opportunity to do Lego. Lego Masters US is really quite funny because it's that bloke who was Batman in the Lego movie. But Will Arnett, who's also a producer of the series, along with Brad Pitt. We've got Series 3 at the moment in the UK, and there's a couple of absolute beautiful women on it who are builders of Lego, and this lady called Amy Corbett, who's Scottish and absolutely stunning. She's one of the sort of engineering design experts at Lego, and she's got a very good job, and she's very beautiful. And it's great. It's a great fun series. They all have so much fun. They spend hours building. They've got like 10 hours sometimes to build these constructions. They're told to, well, we want this. You build us the best thing. And some episodes, they get to smash them to speed or blow them up and smash them to pieces and stuff like that. That's a bit over the top because it's an American version of the series. But it's still really good fun. Really good fun, and it's lovely to see what people can do with Lego, and what you know, especially with engineers, because I know some of the NASA designers and engineers have used Lego to design things like the Mars buggy in relation to its sort of legs going over the rocks and staying stable and stuff like that, and that was originally designed via a Lego kit. So, that along with Survivor. What else have I been watching? Big Brother finish. I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and watched episode 1 of the new series of Portrait Artist of the Year, which was really quite good as well. So much to watch. Strictly Come Dancing, and there's so much in the can which is still recording, which we're not going to be able to watch for ages, which of programs we would watch normally straight away, but we just haven't got the time. Doctor Who we watched as well.
Tell me about it.
it's hard when new stuff keeps coming out, you know, to revert back to the stuff that you've got recorded.
Yeah. Oh, Friends as well. I've been building the Friends sets behind me. I will notice on the back of Friends that the first 5 episodes are a bit sort of okay, and then suddenly episode 6 it suddenly becomes really funny, mainly because Ross and Chandler click into this, their characters and their lines and their dry humour just suddenly happens, and it's just very, very funny. And I had obviously seen Friends, dabbled in it from time to time over the years, but I never realised exactly how funny it was, and so it's quite good fun to switch on episode Friends. If you haven't got a great deal of time, you've got like 25 minutes, you can watch your Friends and just enjoy the sheer joy of that. If anyone wants to see my, by the way, if you want to see my friend set build, it's on my TikTok account. I did a little video of its sort of stages of construction. And just behind me here is bag one and two of the Avengers Tower, which is going to be my next project.
Which you're going to relabel as unit, correct?
No. Doing that. Stupid thing to look up and say. No, it's a great project. Now, I just got the base plate out and noticed it's small enough to fit on the end there where my DeLorean currently is. And the DeLorean's going to be moved there and share the shelf with my Doctor Who figures. So that's going to be fun. It's going to take ages to build. It took me ages enough building that Bloomin' Friend set. So this is like 5,000 pieces, so it's going to take a long time. But
wow.
I'm sure I'll probably... While Kirby talks about what he's been watching, I'll probably remember a few other actually interesting programs that I've been watching as well. Kirby!
I don't remember... I haven't watched anything in particular at all other than Doctor Who. However, Archie is the name of the show.
Oh, Archie, that's right, yeah, because Archie Leach.
And here it's available on BritBox.
Thank you, Kirby. That's a very quick segment of the show, Mary.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to be a lot of help either.
No, because you've been away, haven't you? Gallivanting at conventions.
But I've been just watching, you know, single things here and there. Nothing, you know, particularly grabbing. Nothing I particularly love. So it's just, you know, scattered watching.
Okay. Right, as I said, where are we? Sports. I suppose I've been watching some football. That's about it, really. I'm just waiting.
Yeah, even basketball hasn't been offering much because they've been doing these interleague, championships. And since my team kind of lost out early on, you know, it's like those keep going on, so I'm not really into them.
Oh, well. Well, that was a quick piece, wasn't it? Okay, so next week I'll be filming, so we can't record, which is a shame.
Is that happening on the live feed?
Let's have a look. I think Lillian was showing off some of her Doctor Who cosplay items on the live feed. We'll have a look, see what we've got.
What?
No, she wasn't. No, she just made a few comments. Hi, lovies. Guess who? Oh, that's Laurie Nix. Oh my God.
Wow.
It's been a long time.
It's
been a long time. I had hair last time Laurie was on the show. Lillian Robin says, hi, Laurie, long time. Laurie says, yeah, been working in Sundays. Working in Sundays. Working in Sundays. Oh. What do you mean, working on Sundays? Anyway,
yeah,
was that a Mavity Gravity thing? I don't know. And okay. Lillian said, hi, Neil, you're back. Oh, they're off it again. God's sake. You do realise you can get chat rooms, Lillian and Neil. Anyway. So, as I say, I can't record next week because I'm filming. Or actually, no, it's the M&S Christmas party. Well, we're filming during the day, so I can't go because of that. Week after, potentially, that's the 17th of December, when we can, unfortunately, delayedly, talk about Saturday's episode of Doctor Who and Into the Dalek, is it?
Into the
next
Dalek, yes.
Into the next Capaldi episode. And that will be... Oh dear, the next one's Christmas Eve. Can we re-record on Christmas Eve? I think probably not. I don't know. I don't think I'll be allowed to do it. We'll see what happens.
We should probably skip that one.
Yeah,
we probably should not do that one. But the next one is New Year's Eve, right?
Yeah, that'd be awkward to do that one, isn't it? I've got a wedding on the day before.
We're going to have to skip a couple of weeks.
So what you're trying to say is that the 17th episode, if we are allowed to do it, will be the last one of the year.
Yeah.
You don't know if we can do it that day, or
what? New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve? I don't think.
No. The 17th.
I think it will say I can at the moment, but I can never 100% definitely do stuff because sometimes I get bookings. Oh, I need to get a Christmas shoot done. Oh, we might have to fit it in on that day.
Okay, so after that is
7th.
So first
of
one of the next
January
would be Robot of Sherwood.
Okay. Yeah, that will be on the 7th if we do.
I'm just making a note.
Thank you for that. This does make amazing podcasting, isn't it? These conversations. Laurie Nix. Oh, hang on. We're still going on the live feed. It says, Laurie Nix says, hi. And then, you still look hot with no hair. Absolutely. All right. So, Well, I don't know what to say apart from Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, thank you. Oh, we can't do because we've got another one coming. Forget that bit.
We still have one more.
maybe Debbie will show up for that one, eh? But anyway, thank you for listening, watching, taking part in the show. Hope you enjoy the end of Tenant again and the beginning of Shooty Katwa over the next few weeks. And bye!
Goodbye, Fancy Pants.
Bye!
Scarecrow.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are proud members of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended. The music on this podcast is covered by limited online music license from PRS for Music.